The following message was recorded at the 2012 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the No Regrets Conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
And well, we can certainly take it, but we're going to have a time for questions and answers afterwards. 10 days from today is what? All right, well, this is the seminar that you certainly need. It will make that kind of that occasion a little bit better. We have Colleen Sonderman right now, and she told me that she's given this presentation many, many times. It came out of the growth of her husband, who is on the ministerial staff at Elmbrook Church, and said, well, we need a presentation for men about marriage. So she took her experience of being married for 28 years, 35 years as a Christian, a mother of four. Any grands?
No.
No grands just yet. Well, we'll keep that in prayer to come up with a seminar that makes it real good. The key thing is, whatever you learn from here, you got to put it in action today. Now, not all 10, maybe one or two, but put it in action today. It is our pleasure to have here at New Testament, Colleen Sonderman. Colleen? And I'm going to pass out some forms.
Well, thank you so much for having me here. It's the first time I've ever been to New Testament. I think my husband's been here several times, but what a beautiful facility that you have here. And before I talk about what the top 10 things are that every wife wishes her husband knew, I thought I'll just talk a little bit about the differences between men and women. Like the telephone. Men see the telephone as a communications tool. They use the telephone to send short messages to other people. A woman can visit her girlfriend for 2 weeks, and upon returning home, she will call the same friend, and they will talk for 3 hours. Laundry. Women do laundry every couple weeks. A man will wear every article of clothing he owns, including his surgical pants that were hip about 8 years ago, before he will do his laundry. When he is finally out of clothes, he will wear a dirty sweatshirt inside out, rent a U-Haul, and take his mountain of clothes to the laundromat and expect to meet a beautiful woman while he is there. Handwriting. To their credit, men do not decorate their penmanship. They just chicken scratch. Women use scented, colored stationery, and they dot their I's with circles and hearts. Women use ridiculously large loops in their P's and G's, and it's a royal pain to read a note from a woman. Even when she's dumping you, she'll put a smiley face at the end of the note. Cats. Women love cats. Men say they love cats, but when women aren't looking, men kick cats. True? So, in order for us to even begin to look at the top 10 things, we need to take a look at some of the differences between men and women. This will help you then understand how you can tailor your loving specifically to your wife. Now, the list is not all-inclusive, and it's certainly not true for every specific man and woman, but these concepts are generally true. So, four differences that I'm going to highlight. The first difference would be men tend to be more task-oriented, and women tend to be more relational. Men tend to define who they are through their ability to achieve results. And this leads them to be more focused on objects and things, their goals and their tasks, rather than people and feelings. Women, on the other hand, tend to define who they are by the quality of their relationships. Sharing their feelings is more important than achieving goals. And you see this in the way men and women will approach going out to lunch. There's two reasons why a man goes out to lunch. It's an efficient way to approach food, and secondly, it's a good place to solve a problem. Women, on the other hand, have very different reasons for going out to lunch. For them, it's a place to be served and nurtured, so they notice everything. The atmosphere, how the food is presented, what the service is like. It's a place where they can nurture a relationship. That's the second reason they go. So no wonder my husband and I have trouble when we go out to lunch, because he sits down, snarfs down his food, and is ready to go. And I've ordered a decaf and want to sit there and talk for an hour and a half. And then we end up clashing because we're different. He's got a task that he needs to get done. I want to nurture a relationship. And it causes a clash. And I think so often in our marriages, the clashes come from the differences, not maybe necessarily because either difference is right or wrong. Secondly, men tend to be more objective, and women are more sensitive. Men can objectively look at a situation and see clearly the big picture. They relate to people in situations, but they don't become entwined with them. Women, on the other hand, look at a situation and what they see are details. Even a look can be a big issue for a woman. They also become an intimate part of the people in their lives and even of their home, of the things that they have. So I look at my husband and I. We look at our house. He objectively looks at our house. He says we have everything we need. We have a recliner, we have a remote, and we have an HD TV. We are set. Nothing else. We don't need anything else. What do I do when I look at the house? I see the details. I see the stains in the carpeting. I see the holes in the couch. I see the paint peeling off of the ceiling in the office. I see the details. He sees objectively more the whole thing. It also happens when we go to a party. So we both go to a party. We get in the car after the party, and he said, "Wasn't that great?" And I say, "No, that was horrible." He's like, "What do you mean?" And he said, "It was wonderful. I was with my four guy friends, and we talked about the Packers, and we talked about the Bucks, and we just had the greatest conversation. It was a great party. Why was it horrible for you?" And I say, "Because you never looked at me. You never touched my arm. You never said anything to me the entire time we were there. You didn't even notice." Because he is more objective, looking at the whole thing, and I'm seeing the details. And that's so often where we clash. Third, men are cave dwellers, and women are fireside talkers. When men are stressed, they have a tendency to go into their caves. They become increasingly focused and tend to withdraw. They do this so that they can solve a problem there. Women, on the other hand, when they are stressed, they actually become more emotionally involved. Talking helps them get their problems out in the open and decreases their feeling of hopelessness. So what happens when my husband and I come home from work? He comes home, he sits down in his chair, he turns on ESPN, and he pulls out the paper, and what does he want to do? He just wants to read and watch TV and just kind of be alone. So then he hears the garage door go up, and that's me coming home. And I've had a very stressful day, too. And what do I want to do? I want to tell him every little detail of my day. And it's the last thing in the world that he wants and or needs, and we clash. 5:30, I think, is the most common time that my husband and I have arguments. And I think it's more that it's more of a fact because our needs are so different at that time of the day. Number four, men are instinctively motivated sexually, and women always see their sexuality in the context of relationship. Men come into marriage with an automatic, strong desire for sex. They need little or no preparation. It's just there. Women, on the other hand, see sexuality not as an end in itself, but they always see their sexuality in the context of relationship. They need to feel emotionally nurtured before they are sexually aroused. The most common complaint I can think of with my peers when they talk about their marriages is, why does it seem in the area of sex that we are so different? And our needs are so different. And it seems to cause so many problems in their marriage. So those are some of the differences. And it may seem a little bleak, because it's like, how can we reconcile these differences? But what I want to say to you is, I can't tell you what your needs are, because I don't really know them. But I can tell you what my needs are. And I can tell you what I've heard from so many women that I know and that are friends of mine, what they feel they really wish their husband knew about them. And that's all I'm going to present to you. I'm going to give you a list of 10 things. And I'm going to give short little, I think they're on your sheet, just short little, you know, snippets of what it is. And then I'm going to go on and on and on and on about each little snippet, just so you know. I think the first time I gave this talk, a guy wrote down the first 10 points, the first 10 things from the first point, because I communicated like a woman with lots of details. So sit back, and what I'd really like you to do is just listen for a couple things that you might be able to take home. And if you do anything, do one thing, and that's to tell your wife that you came to this, because it will mean so much to her that you loved her enough that you were going to come and try to figure out how you might be a better husband. So, number one, listen to me. It is very important that you listen to your wife. It's more important than sex. It's more important than gifts. It's more important than solving her problems. Listening makes a woman feel loved and significant. Now, there are several points I want to make about this. Listening is distinctly different from hearing. My husband has an incredible ability to hear. He can actually be watching a game on TV. He can be reading a book. He can be playing some little game with one of the kids and talking to me. And at any point in the conversation, I can say, what's the score of the game? He'll be right there. What are you reading about on the sports page? Boom, he'll tell me what he's reading about. You know, who's winning the game? He knows who's winning the game, and he can pair it back to me exactly what I just said. But he is not listening to me. He's hearing me. It's mechanical. I know he's not really listening. Listening involves a lot of things, but three things that are critical when you listen to your wife. One is eye contact. She needs to know that you're with her. I remember our eldest daughter, once went away for a retreat, and it was called the Ultimate Date Weekend. And she was in junior high, and they were going to talk about dating and all that kind of thing. So at one point in the weekend, they put all the boys on one side of the room, and they put all the girls on the other side of the room, and they said, okay, if there's anything you want to say to all these guys or you want to say to all these girls, you can stand up and say it or ask a question. So she said this little redheaded boy popped up, and she didn't even know he could talk. She had never heard him talk before. And he stood up and he said, why, when I'm talking to you girls, do you look straight into my eyes? He said, I feel like you're peering into my soul. And then he sat back down again. And I know that may be what it feels like. That when your wife is really looking at you, you're feeling like she's peering into your soul. And she may be. But what it communicates to her is that you want to hear what she has to say. So maintain that eye contact. Secondly, volleying in the conversation. Restating, commenting. Sometimes when I'm talking to my husband, sometimes it feels like we're playing tennis. And I just keep lobbing balls over the net and nothing's coming back. And so volley in that conversation, ask questions, comment about what she's saying. Body language, nod, lean forward, don't nod off, but nod. That's a really good thing. Yeah, you've nodded off. But above all else, communicate to her that you understand how she feels. And if you don't understand how she feels, keep talking until you do understand how she feels. You also need, in listening, you need to create a safe environment where she has freedom to share. Some women are insecure, and they will always defer to the stronger opinion. Help your wife to feel that she can share anything with you, and she doesn't need to be fearful, even if it's controversial. Thirdly, remember that you may not need to fix the problem that she's sharing. As a good friend of mine once put, he said, sometimes for a woman, listening is the solution. And I know for Steve, this is the hardest part for him to understand, because he wants to solve my problem. He wants to fix it. And what I really want is I want him just to understand what I'm trying to say to him. and then I feel better. So that was number one. Number two, talk to me. Your wife desperately wants you to open up to her. She wants to know what's going on inside of you. It seems for my husband, it takes a lot of small talk. It takes a lot of time of us talking about maybe his grocery list of what he has to do before he can open up. But finally, after we've talked for a while, he's able to start sharing things with me. And the three things that'll drive you deeper that you're with your wife, if you can talk to her about these three things, it'll make a big difference. The first one is feelings. Tell her how you're feeling. Now, for my husband, Steve, I would say to him, Steve, how are you feeling? And he'd say, good. I'd be like, Steve, that's not a feeling. And he'd be like, oh, Steve, how are you feeling? I'm feeling bad. Steve, that's not a feeling. Bad is not a feeling. So we wrote feelings on a card. Happy, sad, lonely, depressed, whatever, fearful. And so I'd say, Steve, how are you feeling? He'd whip out his card. I'm angry, or I'm sad. But it really helped. It helped with us being able to communicate on a deeper level so that we weren't just talking about what he did. It wasn't just a to-do list of what happened at church that day. But it was on a deeper level. It was what was really going on inside of him. And he's great at it now. He's really, really great at it. But it took a long time for him to figure that out. Another thing to talk to her about is fears. Your wife really wants to know what your concerns are. She wants to know if you're afraid of losing your job. She wants to know if you're afraid of providing adequately for the family. She wants to know if you're stressed and worried that you're burning out. She wants to know what your fears are. And I think sometimes it's tempting as a man to appear like you got everything together and everything's just going great and everything's going to be just fine. And sometimes the best thing to do is to be able to share that you really are afraid. Finally, it would be failures. And I think that's even harder. I think that's the hardest thing to share, are failures. But it shows your humanness. It shows the two of you are the same at the foot of the cross. That there's not one above the other, but you're both the same needing a savior, that things do go wrong. Larry Crabb, in his book, The Safest Place on Earth, said this: it is our weakness, not our competence, that moves others. Our sorrows, not our blessings, that break down the barriers of fear and shame that keep us apart. Our admitted failures, not our paraded successes, that bind us together in hope. It's really true. Number three would be study me. In the book, Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus, the author talks about men and women being from different planets. Don't you feel that way sometimes? Like your wife is from a different planet. You do not know the language that she is speaking. It sounds completely foreign to you. Well, a guy wrote a whole book about it, and it was very, very true. Sometimes it's very hard to figure out what your wife needs or what your wife wants, isn't it? Because it's so very, very different from what you may need or from what you may want. And I remember this with my husband and I when we first were married. He was always giving me gifts, but they were either robes, pajamas, or lingerie. And at first it was fine. At first it was fine. I was like, that was really nice, because actually a love language for me is getting gifts. So it was wonderful. But then what started happening is we started struggling in our sexual relationship. So then I started looking at these things as a way for him to covertly tell me he wasn't really maybe happy with our sexual relationship. So I remember one time he gave me this peach Armani robe, and I think I threw it right back at him, and we had quite a big to-do about that. And it wasn't that my love language wasn't giving gifts, but it was that he didn't study me enough to know that that wasn't what I really wanted. And he needed to study me. He needed to figure out what it was that I really wanted. I think he has grown probably in this area more than any other area in our marriage. Because my love language is giving gifts, but it's the right gift. So this was probably a year ago or so. I ran out of my favorite perfume that's kind of expensive. We have two kids in college. I wasn't going to go out and buy it. And I just said something to him. I ran out. Well, that night when I went to bed, I put my head hard on the pillow. And there underneath my pillow was a bottle of my perfume. I think that's my favorite gift he's ever given me. Because he studied me. He listened. He knew that's what I wanted. He knew that's what I needed, but I wouldn't get it for myself. And it took a lot of effort for him to figure that out. Something that has really helped my husband and I is a book by Gary Chapman called The Five Love Languages. And it talks about different love languages that we each have. And the first one would be words of affirmation. The second one is gifts of service. The third one is quality time together. The fourth one is gifts. And the fifth one is physical touch. And they actually have this book on tape. So what my husband and I did, we were going on a vacation, so we were driving, so we would pop the CD in, and we would listen to a love language. The first one was words of affirmation. I'd say, is that your love language? And he'd be like, no, not really. And I'm like, no, that's not really mine. And we went through all those love languages and then talked to each other in a setting that wasn't volatile and talked about what each other needed. And it made a remarkable difference in our marriage. It was a way for us to study each other. Number four, encourage me. Your wife needs you to encourage her on a daily basis. If she is a stay-at-home mom, she needs to know that you appreciate all she does. She especially needs to know that you don't think she's a marshmallow brain just because she's at home. If your wife works outside of the home, she needs to know that you appreciate her skills. She needs to know that she isn't necessarily a bad mom or a wife because she's chosen to work. As a woman, in a culture that expects us to be superwomen, we feel guilty no matter what we do. And we need our husbands to support us and encourage us in whatever thing we feel God has called us to. Be your wife's number one cheerleader. Help your wife to fulfill her dreams. And then make it possible financially and practically for her to do it. My husband is my number one cheerleader with my job. He makes sure that he carves out time in his schedule so that I can go to a conference that I want to go to. When the kids were small, he got a day off during the week. That was the day that I worked, and he took care of our four kids under the age of seven for, you know, a 12-hour day. And he's done that, you know, our whole marriage. Steve is the only reason that I am here speaking to you, because I'm afraid to do this, and I don't know. I never felt that I was confident enough to be able to do this, but he is my cheerleader, and he was so convinced that this was something that I needed to do, and he encouraged me and was positive with me, and he's a big reason why I'm here. So be your wife's cheerleader, number one. You're her number one fan, to encourage her to be all that God wants her to be. Number five, prioritize me. Your wife needs to know she is more important than your job or anything else in your life. I remember seeing kind of a foreshadowing of this when my husband and I were dating. He was coaching football at the local high school, and I was in college in Madison. And I would endure rain and sleet and snow, and I'd come home and watch him coaching. And if they won, it was this wonderful reunion we would have after the game. But if they lost, I didn't really care. And I'd run up to the gate and wait for him to walk by and see that I was there. And I remember he would just look at me, and he would just keep on walking. And I would just be crushed. And little did I know that that would be something that would carry on into our marriage. That he would be very attentive with me when we were home. But when he was in a setting of ministry, it was like I wasn't even there. And that was really something that we had to talk about, and it was difficult. Ephesians 5:33 says this: each one of you must love your wife as you love yourself. Love here means place high value or importance on. I knew for my husband, ministry seemed to be over me. And that was very hurtful. I remember a friend of mine when she got married, at the reception, all the groomsmen dressed in blaze orange and did a hunting widow song dancing around her about how she was going to be alone. And I sat in the corner and cried because I thought, yeah, this is going to be her life. I remember my mom saying something that I only understand now. She would say to my dad, I just wish I could be one of your customers instead of your wife. And I think there's a lot of women who feel that way. And I think it's a temptation once you get married that the pursuit is done, the marriage job is done, and now I'm on to build my career. But the marriage job's just begun when you get married. So, a couple of things. Look at your calendars. Evaluate how much time is spent with work, with recreational activities, and with hobbies. And does your schedule reflect the priority that your wife is? Look at your heart. Examine where your passion really is. Is it with starting or maintaining a business? Is it ministry? Is it a sport? Is it children? Or is it first of all the Lord? And secondly, your wife. Is that where it is? Look at your actions. Do they demonstrate a consistent willingness to put your wife number one on the list? Do you demonstrate actively that she's highly valued? Number six, care for me. In Ephesians chapter 5, verses 28 and 29 say this: in this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church. Take care of your wife and her unique needs. You know, as women, we are natural nurturers and caretakers, and oftentimes we are so busy taking care of everyone else that we don't take care of ourselves. So this application relates back to a previous point. Study her. Figure out what she needs. Don't always make her ask for it. Call the babysitter. Draw a bath for her. Jump up and clean the dishes. Those are wonderful ways that you can care for her. Love and take care of your children. For most women, their main job, even if they have another one, they feel is taking care of their children. And one of the most loving things that you can do as a husband is to be involved with your children. In doing this, you validate a very important role that she has in her life. The best help was when you see a need and initiate it on your own. Put the kids to bed. Sit down and help them with their homework. Go to their conferences. Go to their concerts. Know their schedules. This is a way to love your wife, by loving your children. Number seven, prepare me. Be tender with her sexually. This means going slow and preparing her. I don't like this analogy, but it's somewhat appropriate. Men are like microwaves. They heat up instantly. Women are more like slow cookers. It takes all day to cook something for a woman. For women, it's not the end that is most enjoyable, but it's the process getting there. It's the hug in the kitchen in the morning. It's the call at noon just to say that you love her. It's dinner together, alone without the kids. It's talking together after the kids have gone to bed. It's candles lit in the bedroom. It's simply holding her. It's the process. Trust me, it's the slowness and the gentleness of your preparation of your wife that will lead to the most fulfilling sex life. Number eight, lead me. Be a spiritual leader of your family. Even though my husband is a pastor, it just seems that I'm usually the one who has to initiate prayer together, or I'm usually the one who's tuned into where the kids are spiritually. I'm usually the one who does little devotion things after dinner, and I desire more than anything for my husband to take the lead sometimes in all of these areas. Let me read from Ephesians again. Ephesians 5, 25 through 27. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present to her himself as a radiant church, without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. Lead her as Christ did the church, and he did that by a willingness to die for the church, to sacrifice for the church. He's our servant leader, and you are called to be the servant leader of your families. Let me read Ephesians 6:4. That says, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Take the lead in training your children to love and serve the Lord. Look for opportunities to grow in your own spiritual life so that you can pass it on to your kids. I think my husband gets equal calls from men as well as from women about thanking him for his ministry to men. And what the women say is, thank you so much for helping my husband to grow closer to the Lord, because the repercussions of it impact our family. And I have a servant, I have a godly, loving husband because of what he has learned in ministry. Number 9, free me. A deep need of your wife as a woman is to have deep relationships with other women. She needs a lot of time with her relationships to really feel whole. Free her so that she can spend the time she needs with the other women she loves and value that as much as she does. And that may seem sort of a backhanded way of really loving your wife, but it is critical to her health as a woman emotionally and spiritually and relationally. My husband blocked out when the kids were small. Every Tuesday night, he would not have a meeting. He would not be gone. He would always be home with the kids on Tuesday nights, because that is the night when I met with 3 other women who are my closest friends, and we prayed, and we had Bible study, and we spent 3 hours together. We still meet. We've been meeting for over 20 years. And if he would not have freed me up so that I could have done that, I probably wouldn't have done it, because it's difficult to be gone when you have kids in school in the evening. But he took that. He freed me up with that. He doesn't question me when I spend 3 hours with my girlfriend at lunch. He does not know what we talk about. He does not understand how you could spend 3 hours at lunch. But he knows that he will eventually reap the benefits, because I will be happier and healthier and more whole of a wife. Number 10, date me. This is one of the best ways for you to show your wife that you value your relationship and she's a priority. It's going to cost you time, and it's going to cost you money, but it is well worth the investment. Sometimes your wife may be reluctant to go out because it's such a pain preparing for it, because she's got to call the babysitter, she's got to figure out what you're going to do. What my husband and I did, he would plan the date 1 week, and then the next week I would plan the date. When we first got married, we had very, very little. We didn't have much money at all, but we had great dates. We had crummy furniture, but we had a weekly date, and we were committed to it. And I firmly believe that little investment of that weekly date has given us, reaped us dividends that are unbelievable in our relationship now. I can tell you, he is my best friend after 28 years of marriage. And it didn't magically come. It was, as my father would say, the miracle of compounding, was all those little deposits that we made every week along the way. And so I would, if there's anything you take home from this, take that home. It's worth it. Sometimes when we were really poor, it was just like we went out for a walk. You know, we could only afford the babysitter. So we would just leave. We would get away from the kids. But it made a huge, huge difference in our marriage. I want to just conclude with a story. Robertson McQuilkin, former president of Columbia Bible College, resigned from his post to care for his wife, who was suffering from advancing Alzheimer's disease. Let me read to you an excerpt from his resignation letter to the board. I believe this will be instructional and motivational to you as you seek to love your wives. My dear Muriel has been in failing mental health for about 8 years. So far, I have been able to carry both her ever-growing needs and my leadership responsibilities at CBC. But recently, it has become apparent that Muriel is contented most of the time she is with me and almost none of the time I am away from her. And it's not just discontent. She is filled with fear, even terror, that she has lost me and always goes in search of me when I leave home. Then she may be full of anger when she cannot get to me, so it is clear to me that she needs me now, full time. Perhaps it would help you to understand if I shared with you what I shared at the time of the announcement of my resignation in chapel. The decision was made, in a way, 42 years ago, when I promised to care for Muriel in sickness and in health, till death do us part. So as I told the students and faculty, as a man of my word, integrity has something to do with it. But so does fairness. She has cared for me fully and sacrificially all these years. If I cared for her for the next 40 years, I would not be out of debt. Duty, however, can be grim and stoic. But there is more. I love Muriel. She is a delight to me. Her childlike dependence and confidence in me, her warm love, occasional flashes of that wit I used to relish so, her happy spirit and tough resilience in the face of her continual distressing frustration. I do not have to care for her. I get to. It is a high honor to care for so wonderful a person. God has given each one of you a high honor to care for your wife. And my prayer for you is that you would just take one or two things that you felt like the Holy Spirit just really put on your heart and share those with your wife and tell her, this is something I'm really going to work on. And I can't tell you what a difference, what an encouragement that will be to her. Are there any questions that you might have? We have probably 10 minutes.
Yes.
It's the details. And I think that's a fantastic, that's a really, really good question. And there's not a simple answer, but I do think what it is it isn't that my husband was fellowshipping for that long time with people that he hadn't seen for a while, because that's a wonderful thing. But what it was is that we came there together and there was never an acknowledgement of me during that whole time that we were there. So what we have talked about is, even if he just looks across the room and catches my eye, or he'll just go and say, can I get anything for you? Can I get you a soda? It's just stepping away from that conversation and showing your wife that you still remember you're there with her and you're happy that you're there with her, and making sure she's okay and going right back to your conversation. I am telling you, it'll make all the difference in the world, and it'll take you about a minute.
Yeah.
Right. 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 Exactly. 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 And for a woman, when she is out with you, she's very proud that she's out with you. And she wants everyone to see that she's with you. And when you acknowledge her, that is a huge encouragement to her in public. It really means something. Yeah. I didn't what? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Very good. I can't hear you. Oh, thank you. Another great question. I think it's the volleying that I talked about, volleying in the conversation, where you're actually, she's talking, and then you're asking her questions to delve deeper into it. So she knows you're really there with her, where as opposed to, I remember my husband, sometimes I'm talking to him, and like if the TV's back here, and he's standing here, and I'm standing here, and we're talking, I can see him, and he's just sneaking a peek right over my shoulder, you know. And oh boy, that's a problem. So, you know, I think it's that you're there, that you're really making some good eye contact. Yes, that's a great book. Yes, thank you so much. That is a very good book. Yes? Women are like what? Okay. Exactly. It's because you don't want your wife to stay 22 in her mind. Maybe physically that would be okay, but you don't want a 22-year-old immature, you know, having just not a depth to her. You know, that's the thing that I don't understand when people will say, well, we're getting a divorce because they've changed. Well, I hope someone would change after 25 years. That would be really sad if they hadn't changed. So I think that's an excellent point about studying, because you're both changing. God is he's sanctifying us. We are changing. We are becoming, hopefully, more and more like him. So we're actually becoming more and more like the person God made us to be. That's why I don't want to be young anymore, because I don't want to go back to my spiritual immaturity. I want to continue to mature. I like getting older. It's way better than the alternative. And I really think it's something in our marriages. That's what makes our marriage so interesting, is because it's always changing and evolving. Really good question. Yes? It is. It makes it exciting. It makes it exciting. Yes, here. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I that's a wonderful illustration. Mm-hmm. Back there. Well, and I think really that's that point of prioritizing her, that she's important. Was there someone over here? Over here? That's a good question. This, you know, you hear people talk, and I've heard this a lot, and I even might have said it, and I didn't mean to say it. God first, wife second, family third. I really disagree with that, because I think it needs to be more, Jesus is the center of my life. He is everything to me, and everything else is a spoke on that wheel. And it goes out from it. So when I truly love the Lord and am following what he says, guess what? I'm going to be like him. And then that would mean you're going to be the best husband that you could ever be for your wife. And he will lead you as to how to love her. He's an extravagant lover. That's what grace is. He's an extravagant lover. And that's what he wants you to be. He wants you to show your wife extravagant love, because that's what he's shown to you. And so I think if God is in the right place in your life, you'll know. She won't become an idol, because there's no room on the throne. We'll take one more. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. We can end on that. Thank you.